Russ and Chris, obviously, you guys are doing the besties now, sort of a side project.
The besties resties.
The besties resties.
Yeah.
And it's the gravy poured atop the main course, which we're recording right now. A delicious, succulent gravy.
Which is an ice cream sundae.
Right, it's an ice cream sundae with gravy on it. But anyway,
it's like the Equate brand.
Yes, thank you. But I was just, I'm worried, I guess, that you guys are all fucking used up, all wrung out.
Yeah.
All the, like, games talk. Because I saw how many games you guys talked about. It's a lot. And I'm worried you've been squeezed dry and put through the thresher. And then what we're going to get is what they call in the podcast industry, the snickle fritz.
Bitter drag.
Is that a term that you coined for your book?
Well, technically, yes. The Big Comfy Couch coined it, and then we kind of built on it.
Yeah.
When are you guys going to start doing that?
Write a book?
No. When are you guys start doing the resties?
It's happened already.
Ah, cool. I meant to say, when are you guys going to do a second one? Because I loved the first
2 weeks after the second. 2 weeks after the first one.
Which was...
Is there a moment in the resties where you guys were like, oh, we got to save some juice?
Griffin's asking if you did the peek and back off. That's a he's so worried. They hear Game Nut but not be intact.
We've got some primo Majesco games to talk about this episode, so do not worry.
No!
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know a game that came out this week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best monkey ball that came out this week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and FIGGA!
My name is Ross Ratchick, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. This week, we have a long... storied franchise returning to its former glory. No one wrote the name of the game in this document, but it's like Super Monkey something something something.
I wrote it.
Super Monkey Ball Banana
Super Monkey Ball Mania Banana Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania. What it, now play it, what could that be?
Well, we're not really going to talk a whole lot about it. That's good. I'm sorry, I got to surprise y'all. We're going to talk a little bit about it. But the game is, it's Super Monkey Ball. It's fine. We'll get into it a little bit. I had a question that I wanted to run past y'all for this episode. Is that cool by you?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
So while playing this game, I got bored. And instead, I watched my 3-year-old son finally fall in love with Sonic the Hedgehog games. This has been a 3-year project spanning the entirety of his life. And he now knows how to play a Sonic game. Is it one of the main ones? No. Is it the mobile one? Yeah. Anyway, it inspired a question in my brain that is, are we living in the true golden age of Sega? Which sounds controversial because they don't have a console like they did when we were kiddos.
Right.
But I think we are. And I thought maybe for this episode we could talk about why there's never been a better time for Sega.
Well, we've languished in this introduction long enough. Let's take a quick break and we'll get right
into it. It's what I do.
He languishes, Justin.
But first, a brief discussion of Super Monkey Ball. May I begin?
No. You may not.
But
no.
Please.
No, you may not. You may go later after we have talked about Super Monkey Ball, the video game.
Okay.
I want to talk about how this game starts because I don't think there's been any game that I've played this year that starts stronger than Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania, and I will tell you why right now. The game starts, the menu screen comes up, and you hear this. Hello, 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 banana. Amazing.
It's a good
start.
Yeah. A lot of people talk about the the Mako Reactor sequence in Final Fantasy VII as like a strong introduction.
World 1-1 in Mario.
Infiltrating Outer Heaven and Metal Gear Solid. Like, there's some really strong, but I think we can all agree that hello, 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 banana is, great.
Great. Dynamite.
I'm going to say another thing I like about this game. One, if you like Super Monkey Ball, hey, guess what? It's more Super Monkey Ball, and I think you'll like it.
There's so much of it.
There's so much of it. There are new characters added, like you can get the dude from Yakuza, you can get Sonic the Hedgehog, and I thought, uh-oh, it's going to make me play a lot of Super Monkey Ball to unlock those characters. No.
No.
It seemed to understand exactly the amount of time that I had for Super Monkey Ball, and it made sure that I could unlock almost all of them with that amount of time. So if that's what you're coming for, great. You'll have it all in like the first hour or two.
There's a weird this is a good Super Monkey Ball game. My problem with it is I think that I just don't really enjoy Super Monkey Ball anymore, and I used to a lot. I think I mostly enjoyed it as a... I'll tell you the heartbreaking thing for me. I used to play this game. I used to play the mini games in like local competitive multiplayer mode with my friends like for entire evenings, specifically Monkey Target.
Yep.
Which is a really fun game where you roll down like a ski slope and launch off the end of it and then try to like hover over to a target and land on it. It was fun. And you can do it for hours with your friends and it's a good time. The game has been remade. So there are some... I am not like a big enough devotee to this franchise to have really noticed the differences. But the physics engine is a bit different.
Oh.
Which is like... You know, if you are somebody, if you're like a speedrunner who spent tens of thousands of hours playing any of the Super Monkey Ball games, I bet it's definitely noticeable. It was, however, for me, extremely noticeable in Monkey Target, which I would say is nigh on unplayable, which is fucking weird. Like, it's almost impossible to make anything happen in that game because of the differences to the physics engine. That's the only weird thing that I noticed about that.
I would also say that the mini games. You know, you might think, oh, the main mode of Super Monkey Ball is the way to go. That is mistaken. The main mode of Super Monkey Ball is kind of bad. As Griffin said, the party games are where it's at. And the party games are quite good. And I actually was also playing Monkey Target and did notice it felt a little bit different, but I still was able to really enjoy myself. So I think that's still really good in golf and bowling. There's like a lot of party games that are still really good. So if you like are into it for that, there's so much just... of that stuff that you could ignore the main game and be perfectly fine. It is weird that you can't play as Sonic in the party games or Yakuza guy or whomever. That's weird. But other than that, I actually think it's pretty good on the party game front.
I am so glad I listened to the besties because I tried to just play through the campaign.
No, big mistake.
Let me tell you, yeah, that was very quickly became a test of my patience.
It's not a fun
because
game.
It's not at all. Here's the thing about Super Monkey Ball. Like to watch it. It's a great game to watch. Like
watching talented people. Like,
yeah,
skilled
talented
Monkey
people.
Ball players is great.
Yeah, or people who are really bad losing their gourds. That's also good. But yeah.
Justin, unleash. We've been waiting.
You're going to let me out?
Okay.
Yeah,
let him out.
The Kraken.
I didn't enjoy this very much.
Oh, okay.
All right.
That's maybe understating it. I would rather, if they made Madden as a 4X game, I would rather become a pro level player of that than another hour of Monkey Ball. When the Skype call came to begin this show, it was the sweetest sound I ever heard, knowing that I would have no more cause to play Monkey Ball. I don't even know. I can't judge if it's this game's fault. Maybe it is. I'm hearing from some of you that seems to have its failings. Just Monkey Ball as a game sucks, like as a single player. And I'll tell you why. I was thinking about it. I was playing it like, why does it suck? If it's the sort of thing where if you start having too much fun, you lose,
yeah.
Right? It wants you to do that. It's like how Sonic sometimes the bad Sonic games wants you to slow down and find all the stuff, and the good Sonic games are like, fucking rip it, baby, go! This game is like, if you start having fun making a ball go down a slide fast, there's something primal about that is pleasurable.
Yeah.
If you start like, man, I'm really whipping ass, then it's like, oh, you're having too much fun. You're going to go off the side and start over. Like, no, slow down. That's the fun of Monkey Ball, is taking corners in a slow fashion so you can methodically make it to the end. I think I finally packed it up the first time that there was like a platform at the end of the level that was like going up and down, and to finish the level I had to like patiently wait for it to return
an elevator
and then enjoy my way onto the elevator. It's just like completely undelightful. I
wish I would have told you.
If you're the sort of person that just plays single player, like just I'm not a multiplayer gamer hardly at all. I mean, like almost without exception. And this was most certainly like a unpleasurable full price experience for me, a consumer.
The strength of the game is the multiplayer modes, which yes. they have incorporated like the mini games because they have incorporated like a lot of them. I didn't see anything missing. And there's like a pool game and a bowling game and. They are a great golf game.
That's like better than most golf games.
They are more fun than the core game experience. So if you bought this game and aren't enjoying it like Justin and experiencing some buyer's remorse, I'd encourage you to check those out because they are pretty great. But yes, it is fundamentally not my jam to go through these mazes.
I'm going to wrap up the specific monkey ball section of the show right here. By saying goodbye, 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 banana.
Banana.
All right. Okay. So Chris is about to try and convince us that it's not the Sega Genesis era or Dreamcast era that was Sega's golden era, but this one where they got Super Monkey Ball out the door.
Are you talking about, are you making a distinction between Sega as publisher or Sega as developer?
Hmm. Good question.
I'd say both. I would
company.
Say Sega
as a force of gaming.
As a force.
For we the gamers.
Yes. Because, okay, so here's my point. One, everything that you loved from the Sega Genesis days, you can pretty much play it anywhere you want right now, right? Like, it's probably on iPad. It's going to be on Switch if it isn't already. They're going to
Lethal
give
Enforcers.
For free.
What
is
about Lethal
anything
Enforcers,
that you
want to
play?
Okay. Right?
You know, like General Chaos isn't there because of EA, but I can't hold that against Sega. Right. Sonic games are actually good now, which I know is a controversial take. I say this as somebody who loved Sonic as a kid. Those games aren't great. Like, they're not. Mario games are better. Sonic games, for all the reasons that Justin said back in the day, they punished you for the fun after the first two levels. Anybody who says they love Sonic 1 and 2, they love the first level or two of Sonic 1 and 2. Right. Sonic Mania, Sonic Colors, those games rule.
Incredible.
Right?
Are you talking, for your thesis here, are you talking about more of a, you're not putting such sort of clinical, like, calendar year date limits, like 2021. You're talking more in terms of, like, something more amorphous, an era.
Yeah.
A phase.
I would say this era started in, like, the last 4 years, 3 to 4 years.
I will say this stuff, they're not exact, I can't like exactly get into it very deeply, despite my many efforts, but I do think that what they're doing with the Yakuza franchise is sort of one of the great success stories of gaming right now, where it's like, it's weird, it's huge, it's well-funded, and has developed like a really big audience, which I think is extremely cool to build on your... and that's a franchise that's also cool because I feel like that's one that they just like really invested in.
Yeah.
In a way that like people don't, like a lot of publishers don't have that sort of patience. Like they just kept laying the groundwork and they just kept bringing them over. And now I feel like they're starting to like reap the benefits of that in a major way.
I think they took the playbook from another company they merged with or acquired, which is Atlus. Because Persona and Shin Megami Tensei, same thing, right? Like, Persona has just only gotten bigger here. Shin Megami feels like it maybe is going to finally have that moment with the big new release on Switch this, I think, December, right? So
that sounds right.
They have three of the biggest RPG franchises in active RPGs right now. That's wild. That's, again, so much better than any other point. And my argument here is, one, Sega Genesis period, love it. But a lot of the stuff that's great there is, like, EA games. Sega Dreamcast, my personal favorite period, also love it. but they weren't like dominant. It was mostly like, oh, here are some quirky things. And if you want quirk, right now we have one, Hatsune Miku, which is the single greatest living pop star. And
living's
13
a fun
Sentinels.
Way of putting that.
But okay, not living.
She's not alive.
She's not alive. What? She's not living. She's not alive. She's not living.
I mean, it's one of those things where it depends on what you mean by living, right? Because I would say being
Chris, the robots are taking our jobs, and as somebody in the entertainment industry, in the music industry, like myself, it's a robot, and it's taking our jobs.
And do you not think that the robot will take you? Like, robots could write about video games pretty easily. They are them.
Hmm.
Oh.
Who better to write about video games than themselves?
Hatsune Miku.
Right, exactly. I am great. That's Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania. I'm a good one.
I am not political.
I'm a non-political experience.
Does Sega
We can all agree on this.
Is Hatsune Miku?
Hatsune Miku is, it's difficult to
Can anyone
explain.
Truly own Hatsune
well,
Miku?
Well, no, it's true, because intellectual property rights work differently in Japan, so it is, like, more open source than, like, Mickey Mouse. But, yeah, Sega owns the rights to make Hatsune Miku.
So the Prime Minister is Hatsune Miku, is what you're saying.
What?
That's...
The Japanese Prime Minister?
I don't think that's how that works either.
That's okay.
Kind of new Prime Minister. Anyway.
All right, let me... how much is left of your thesis?
I mean, I could go into, like, the assembly, Creative Assembly 2 points, but I don't think, like, anybody wants us to do that. So maybe you should save me.
I'm just saying, fucking 1999, launch of the Dreamcast, Sonic Adventure, Shenmue, fucking lots of jammers. This would just have radio. I think I would be hard-pressed to believe that there is currently or ever will be a better Sega era than that one right there.
I think the argument would be that you can now play I don't know this for sure because I don't play Sega games because generally they're not great. But the ones that
wow,
I do enjoy,
that's wrong.
You
wow.
can play more or less anywhere. I think that is the change.
That's true. Here. That unites we the gamers.
You don't need to invest.
Rather than divides us.
Yeah, you don't need to invest in like a doomed console like the Dreamcast to experience these enjoyable
wow.
games now.
Sega looked at the console wars and said, let there be peace.
Yeah.
They were going to make a Dreamcast 2, and actually there's like a million pre-orders for it, but they were like, let there be peace.
The only winning game is not to play.
Yes, exactly. And after that, Seaman 2, which they did release also. You got to credit them for that. I mean, I would make the argument that that was a very exciting time to be a Sega fan.
The most exciting, because they were throwing their hat over the fence as their death rattle cried out.
As we all remember, I was working at Babbage's at the time.
Right.
And that was a thrilling time to be a Babbage's employee.
That was like a GameStop for people who don't know about Babbage's.
Yeah, right. It got rolled. We used to have a lot of things that weren't GameStop, and now they're just GameStop. That's hard for. Yeah, we used to have like EB Games and Funkoland.
Yeah,
that was one, right?
Man. Newegg.
Yeah, right.
Newegg.
Newegg. Babbage's. Elbow. That's what we called it. No, I would say though that was like an exciting time as a brand. But those game that like that crop of Dreamcast games, in terms of like, would you want to play them today versus the games that Sega is releasing today? I think you may not hold up quite as well.
I mean, I'd still fuck around with the original Phantasy Star Online with like actual servers and shit.
You can literally play Phantasy Star Online 2 right now. It exists.
Yeah, but it's not. That's okay. That's not the same game. It's wildly different. No.
Okay, you can't, I will say this, against Plant's argument, which I think is fundamentally sound, you can't just say that because a game from the late 90s is playable today, it is part of the landscape currently. That is not a fair argument to make.
Okay, I think, Justin, your point is, if you could only keep the games that were on the Dreamcast, or keep Yakuza, Persona, Shin Megami Tensei, 13 Sentinels, and the modern Sonic games, which would you choose?
I think it's a little busted to weave Persona in there.
Yeah, that's
but
not a Sega
otherwise,
game.
Otherwise,
yes,
yeah,
it is.
It is. They're wholly owned.
Oh,
it's
Atlas?
Wholly owned subsidiary of
Sega. I didn't
Sega.
Know that, actually.
Wow. Yeah. Read a book.
Yeah, read a book there, Mr. Gaming Expert.
Yeah.
Empire of Sin, anyone?
Did you miss the Hatsune Miku song where they explain all of this? So
I think that there's a lack of cohesion, I will say, as a publisher right now, and I think the Persona thing sort of emphasizes this. I think there's a slight lack of cohesion because Sega does so much on so many different fronts. They're mobile, they're they're in arcades still, where a lot of companies have moved on from that. Like I think if you compare I feel like Capcom has done a better job of saying, like, okay, this is what we do. These are our franchises. These are our games.
Got it. And Sega's and too good. They do too much right.
Too diluted, I would say, maybe.
Would you say where I would go with Sega that. Does what Nintendo don't?
Well,
I think
in a real sense, yes, yeah, in the sense absolutely. Of like making things that a lot of people like and then getting super rich off of it.
I would also say, like, I think Sega is more in tune to making games that feel very true, not necessarily true, but very at their core Japanese culture centric, which is interesting. Sure. Nintendo doesn't necessarily do that. And that seems like an identifying characteristic of all these games.
I think that's fair.
I think we did it. I think we proved that I am right. And I don't know who disagreed with me. Griffin is wrong.
I will grant you this. Sega was dog shit for a while after the Dreamcast failed. Sega lost its way. I think we can all agree.
Yeah.
And I, as somebody who does enjoy quite a few Sega games, am happy and excited that they are making cool shit. I think Yakuza absolutely rips ass, and it makes me very happy God. That they got that going on.
Damn it, though. I mean, okay. I know we're not limiting it to years, but like, if we're just 1999.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Anno Domini, 1999. Shenmue, Space Channel 5, Crazy Taxi, Seaman, Choo Choo Rocket, Samba de Amigo, Toy Commander, Slave Zero, like,
Power Stone?
Power Stone is Capcom. I'm not going to give that to them. But like,
it's pretty good.
That's a lot. That's really pretty good. That's really good. I mean, that's really tough to fuck with.
Okay, we'll
but
call
it's
it
been worse, is what I'm saying. Much
it's
worse.
Definitely
and
been worse.
Brought it back.
Oh, wait, I didn't even both the 2K game. I mean, NBA 2K, yeah. NFL 2K. Like,
those used
I mean,
to be
I
Sega games for people who don't know that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm an elderly man. If that's what you're trying to get at, I agree with that too. That's fair. So I guess I'm sorry, Plant. I love that you had the thesis. I'm glad you brought it to us, but like
I like that you put like it in a binder for and you did
yeah,
some
the
clip
binders
art.
That you mailed to all of us are a bit much.
Clip art of Sonic kissing Hatsune Miku, which is looks self-drawn.
It distracted me from thinking about Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania, which I love.
All right.
We mentioned it last week, but we were doing a survey to get a sense of our listenership. We know sexy, sexual, handsome, beautiful, gorgeous.
Smart,
funny, athletic, immortal. But we would like to get a bit more detail. If you would be so kind for advertising purposes, so we can target your interests directly. That's right. Give us your personal information. Go to bit.ly/surveybesties and let us give you the relevant advertising content that you crave, but also help support the show in a real sense because it helps us to make the besties. So it's an easy way to do that. So if you could go to that link, bit.ly/surveybesties.
It's anonymous. Justin didn't make that super clear. It sounds like you were entering your social security number.
We would say that, of course. we would say that, of course. But our listeners are nothing if not savvy, sure. You know?
Survey, 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 survey. Answer the questions.
Yeah. Hey, I want to hear about the frickin' Switch that's got new digital pixels that are, I guess, brighter.
Yeah, Walmart reached out to me and they're like, hey, Doc, do you remember you were doing this? And I was like, yeah, I guess I did. It's a weird time.
It's
weird
also the special thing about OLED, the pixels are actually darker.
Oh.
And it makes the bright ones contrast better.
Yeah, so I've been using the OLED model of the Nintendo Switch, which comes out the day that this episode drops. So you could walk into your local Babbage's and pick one up the very day you're hearing this episode. The question is, should you?
Answer that. That's a yes or no question, Chris. Or Russ.
Wow.
We're all the same. Should you? It is actually a tough question to answer. I will answer it at the top, and then I'll kind of delve into details. And you guys can ask me questions if you want. I think if you have never purchased a Switch before, and you're deciding between a normal $300 Switch and spending $50 more for an OLED Switch, you should definitely spend the $50 more. It is definitely better than the normal Switch.
Is the screen size, if I am misremembering, I apologize, but did they shrink the bezel down a little bit?
Yeah,
so the bezel. Is the screen real estate a bit bigger?
Yeah, the bezel is smaller. The like black rim around the screen is smaller, and the screen is about 13% bigger, which seems like a weird number and not very significant, but it actually, when it's in your hands, the screen like takes up far more of like your field of vision than the normal launch Switch. I think some of that is like, because there's not this giant black rim around it, it like kind of fills your vision more. But also, I don't know, it made a pretty big impact. It's the difference of like going from like a 62-inch television to a 70-inch television, which sort of contextualizes it and makes you realize, oh, it's a little more noteworthy than that. So I definitely, like, that is one of the big selling points for me, is the bigger screen. And just the fact that like it goes almost edge to edge makes it look like a higher end product than the original Switch did. The original Switch, someone recently posted a photo of like the original iPad, which has these giant black bezels, and comparing that to like how the iPads look now, it's kind of night and day.
All the like modification stuff I've been doing with Switch hardware taught me like that bezel is, it's the biggest thing in the universe.
Yeah.
It is so, it's so outrageously big. And every time I would like try and come up with like a color palette for like Switch and Joy-Cons that I would like try and put together look good, I would put it together and then there would be this enormous black border like it was a letterbox film that has been modified to fit your TV. So that is like the big selling point for me.
Yeah. The other big noteworthy thing is like, an OLED screen in general is designed to be more contrasty, more colorful, brighter, more of a pop. And as listeners of the Besties might know, I am colorblind, at least a little bit colorblind. So I was skeptical that I would actually be able to tell the difference between like a high-end LCD monitor, or not really high-end, but an LCD monitor and an OLED monitor. And I can tell you, I actually can. It is pretty significant how much brighter and contrastier the OLED screen is. The examples that I checked out were like, you know, Mario games in particular are like very bright and colorful. And so like just looking at his like red hat, for example, really pops in ways that an LCD screen, it doesn't quite go to that length. It also works really well for contrast. So like, blacks, for example, like if you're in a dark room, black colors will show up much, much darker than they would an LCD screen, where they might be like a little bit kind of dark gray.
Can I explain why?
Yeah.
So on an OLED, on a normal screen, right, all the pixels are lit up. So there's like these lights behind your TV. Think about it like this. This is not literal, but like a few lights behind your TV and they're lighting up all the pixels. So even when there's like you're looking at pure black darkness, right? There's still light coming through, and that's why it kind of looks like that kind of murky gray on LCD TVs. On OLED, basically the individual like black pixels are effectively not lighting up, or it's very low light. So it creates these very, very, very dark darks, which makes everything else really pop next to it, rather than looking like, you know, if you put a white painting, I don't know, you put a light colored painting on a black frame, it's going to make it pop, versus putting it on a similarly colored frame. Yeah. That's what you're doing on like a pixel by pixel level. So that's why it looks great. That's why the PlayStation Vita original, which had an OLED screen, looked way ahead of its time, because it makes anything that has dark images. So weirdly, like horror games would look great on this. A lot of 2D art, like Spelunky 1, should look really good on this. I don't know if you tested that.
Yeah, I actually did. And yeah, it really looks very terrific. It was sharp and like bright and poppy. Both of those games, Spelunky 1 and 2, both look really good.
Yeah, weirdly, if you like 2D games, I think they should look in theory great on this system. Yeah.
Before this, did you predominantly play on a light or a
I played on a regular almost exclusively. The light's screen, I want to say, was slightly smaller than the regular, but it was an LCD screen. So the difference would be comparable in terms of jumping to an OLED switch. You would probably see the difference. Now, before people get all worked up,
I'm not talking about screen quality. I'm more concerned about the like just the experience of holding it and playing it, which is why I switched. I was like getting like some hand numbness and stuff like that, mainly because I got some carpal tunnel.
Sure.
But like I found the light a lot more comfortable to use. But I guess like carriage wise, the form factor is pretty
The form factor is more or less identical. There are slight changes, but you won't notice the difference. And I actually mentioned that in the review. The normal Switch is not a very ergonomic console to hold. It just isn't.
Right.
And it's a bummer because a lot of that ties into the Joy-Cons, which were designed for versatility. They were designed to work in multiplayer, sideways, and also in handheld. And it just results in like a jack of all trades, master of none situation. So yeah, that hasn't changed. I would, you know, we've maybe brought it up a few times, but like if you play a lot of handheld Switch games and you have a normal Switch, buy a Split Pad Pro. It is much better for your hands. It's kind of ugly and goofy looking, but it will not cause as much strain for your hands. But yeah, the fact that A, they haven't changed the ergonomics, which is a bummer, because I agree with you. I think the light is easier to hold. And B, the fact that they haven't changed the internals of the Joy-Cons is like really bad, because clearly everyone is aware at this point of Joy-Con drift and how Joy-Cons can break very easily after using it for, let's say, 6 months. They just like start drifting all over the place. And those haven't changed at all. They've openly said they're the exact same internals of the Joy-Cons previously. And Nintendo, come on, y'all. Like, at this point, your reputation is a little bit on the line because you have a reputation of making these consoles that, like, can sustain bomb blasts. There's a Game Boy in the Nintendo right. World Store that was, like, blown up in the Iraq War and still turns on. And now you've got these Joy-Cons that, like, are failing left and right, and you're still putting them in your brand new hardware box. So
if a little bit of Dorito dust gets in them,
that's all it takes.
They don't make Mario Go anymore.
There's nothing cool ranch about the Joy-Cons.
Nothing at all. I would just to offer another sort of choice for ergonomic Switch play is I have some of this Split Pad Pro actually from a couple different companies. I think Hori makes one, and I can't remember the brand that I have because there's a lot of them. But for me, the better option is a grip case. They make like protective cases or like soft touch silicone cases that add handles to the back. I have been hesitant to like get a new one of those because I don't know if the form factor of the Switch, you know, will be at all different.
It's slightly different, so it might not fit.
Yeah.
Those.
So maybe wait and see if, you know, there are new models that specifically match that. But that's the option I go with when playing the original Switch handheld. Yeah. And it's for me, it's much better than a third-party controller that just doesn't feel great.
I do want to mention the kickstand, which seems like a very dumb thing to mention. But they changed probably the most dramatic change outside of the screen is the fact that they changed the kickstand. It is now like a full length of the console in the back. And it... when the original Switch launched, it launched with this like very puny kickstand that only worked at one angle. You could stand it up, but if you weren't looking directly at it, like it was worthless and it snapped off all the time. It was more or less garbage. The new kickstand is much wider, obviously, so it has more of a basis to stand and also works at any angle. It just like stays. So if you bring it to like 63 degrees, it'll stay at 63 degrees. Which is great if you're like playing your games at like a desk or a table and you can sit. You don't have to like, I would previously like lower my desk chair down to the ground to get a viable angle when playing Switch games. And now you don't have to. So that is a good feature. I do want to make it very clear, though, that there is a elephant in the room regarding this new model and whether you should go out and invest money in a new Switch if you already have one. And that elephant is called 4K and or the Switch Pro.
Yeah.
So if you haven't been following it, for the last several years, there have been rumors that Nintendo has been working on a 4K compatible Switch with improved hardware that will basically run games at a higher resolution when docked and just have like more horsepower in general. The rumors for that started really spiking around E3 when everyone was almost certain that they were going to announce a Switch Pro. And what they ended up announcing was the Switch OLED, which had all the features that were rumored in the Switch Pro, except for the expanded internals, except for the better internals.
Except for being
except
better.
For being like horsepower
other
wise.
Other than an improvement to it, I mean, other than a meaningful improvement, it had everything you could crave.
Now, to add even more spice to the situation, Bloomberg has reported that they've spoken to 9 different developers who have said that they have worked on games that were designed with the 4K Switch specs in mind. That seems pretty lock solid in terms of something that existed at one time and probably will exist again. My speculation in all this is that Nintendo had the plans to do this Switch Pro, had the whole design of it. We're looking at the design, the external design of it is probably what the OLED looks like. But in terms of the actual internals, they were not able to source them due to the ongoing chip shortages that the world has faced right now. So they decided instead to go ahead and just do the OLED. What does that mean for the future? I would not be shocked if next year we saw a 4K Switch Pro with all of the features of the OLED plus the upgraded internals.
Legal check-in. Nintendo has said, basically refuted the entire Bloomberg report and said that they have no plans of releasing any other Nintendo Switch. Again, addendum to that, they kind of have to say this because they need to sell this thing to, I guess, protect the board. I don't know.
Well, no, because it's good when they sell this.
Yeah.
And so when they release the thing and it doesn't sell, that's bad. That's bad for their business.
I think like the earliest that we've heard that it could come, the new version would be like very late next year, early.
Probably alongside Breath of the Wild 2, if I had to guess.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're making it. I mean, I think that we're definitely entering a landscape where people will buck less at like. It's just hard because I feel like you're using an argument that could be applied to a lot of consumer electronics.
You're right, like, but I would say,
you know, it's I don't disagree with. I mean, there's obviously like the only sane thing is to not and just wait until you can get everything for $20. Sure. But like, you know, realistically, like there will be a market for those. You know, if you have this OLED Switch, I am certain there will be a market for it, a secondhand market for it.
I would,
if you wish to upgrade.
I would say, I think it's a little
different. But honestly, can I say one more thing, Russ?
Yeah, sure.
If you care enough to pay the money to get this OLED up, this, let's be honest, non-meaningful upgrade to your Switch, you are probably willing to pay the money to get the meaningful upgrade to your Switch, which is what they are banking on, right? Like, just skip this one. And what I mean, if you care that much, like,
hey,
you know.
Here's when I was younger, I bought the iPod Photo, which I don't know if you remember this. Jeez, but it was an old-fashioned iPod with the wheel on it. But it had a color screen, and you could store photos in it. And I was assured, hey, this is the top-of-the-line iPod. What could be better than this? And then the iPod Touch came out like the same year where it was a full screen iPod, a touchscreen iPod, basically the iPhone. I was not pleased about that at all. So yeah. I can imagine, you know, a young person being like, hey, Switch OLED, I guess this is as good as it gets. And then, you know, like within the same, by next year, this time, there's a way better version out there. That would stink. But
sure.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying, like, this is not.
Oh, it's not new.
You know,
it's not local to Nintendo at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. This is the way things are going. Like, don't get one if it's not a like, I'm looking right now at the iPhone 13. Right? Is that where we're at? Yes. The iPhone 13 and feeling. I don't know. I'll probably wait to see what they get next time. Like, that is the. That is the attitude that you should have, I think,
yeah.
Because I cannot imagine.
I would counter that slightly by saying I think Nintendo's a little bit different insofar as A, they don't do hardware revisions all that often. Consoles in general don't do it all that. It's certainly not an annual thing for...
It's becoming
not annual,
closer.
But like Nintendo does a lot of versions of these things. Like,
yeah, but
you don't want to discount the number of like 3DSs and
you're right,
like iterations.
But
I'm
specifically not so much talking about like a form factor redesign, but like an actual like upgraded hardware redesign happens maybe once every 4 years. So
when you like, say hardware, are you talking? Like you're talking about internals.
Like a PS4 Pro versus a PS4. Like that sort of change happens pretty rarely. So if you are investing in something and you feel like you want to like really get the most out of it, you probably want the one that has the upgraded internals rather than just, you know, the improved screen. We're going to talk more about Metroid next week when everyone's played it. There are moments in Metroid that hitch, like definitely have frame drops almost to the point where I was like, it was this maybe made with the possibility of running on a 4K Switch and then they pulled the plug and just had it, like, I don't know. Like, that's the sort of thing that kind of runs through my head when I'm seeing performance issues in first-party Nintendo games, probably for the next year. Like, was this design with maybe more powerful hardware in mind? It is totally 100% playable and an awesome game. We'll, again, talk about it next week. But it's a very weird situation to have this, like, thing kind of hovering in the background. It hasn't happened very often.
My take on it, and I know that we have sort of like gone back and forth on this, but like my take on it is this. If you don't know, there's a global chip shortage that is impacting nearly every industry and having ripple effects into others. To me, it is abundantly clear that Nintendo planned to release an upgraded internals version of the Switch this holiday season, and those plans were thwarted by this chip shortage, and they already had the components for the OLED, so they went ahead with this like sort of half step measure. If they're being cagey about next year's plans, it's because nobody fucking knows. Like, sure. Nobody knows. Elon Musk was in an interview this week who's like, I think it's getting better. This may have been during when they were doing the financials. Like, I think it's getting better. I don't know. Like, he doesn't know. Nintendo's not going to be like, yep, coming in 2022, you know, this new joint. They have no idea. Nobody knows.
That's
like,
fair.
So that's what you're also buying into is that unpredictability of like, there may be another one next year.
There may not be.
Yes. Also, if they did know, they would not say they know. Like Elon Musk is not going to go out there and be like, actually, I feel very confident. He's going to play it close to the chest. Like,
it's very interesting. I don't know what more you need. I have a full review on polygon.com if you want to read the review of the OLED. But it is a very interesting situation. I'm happy to be using it. It's definitely an upgrade over the last one. But I think whether it's for you is kind of a buyer-to-buyer decision.
That's the trickiest thing on earth about these like hardware half-step, like doing reviews when I used to do these at Polygon. And we would all collaborate on them. What it essentially comes down to is this: what does $300 mean to you?
Yeah, sure.
Because it is an upgrade, right? But like for you, $300 may be weeks of working. You know, in which case, probably not worth it. You may be. I can remember the first time I was working at Best Buy and I saw a professional athlete who lived in the area.
Call him out, like, Justin. Come on.
No. It was long.
Michael
time ago.
Jordan.
It was Troy Brown. Troy Huntington's own Troy Brown. So he was in Best Buy, and I it may not have been Troy Brown, now that is a long time ago, but he was throwing a bunch of CDs and DVDs in the basket, not even really paying attention. And I remember thinking like, holy shit, this guy's gonna bankrupt himself buying all this media. How can this guy do this? And then I realized like, this is nothing to this man. This is nothing. Like, you know, he's just filling up a basket and buying to check stuff out. That may be your case with this OLED Switch. In which case, you know,
it also depends on how big of a like gear pervert you are. Like, I love I love Nintendo hardware, like a lot. If there was a thing that I like, I you know, I mod them and shit. Like, if there's a thing that I collect in this world, it would be that. And so, I don't know, for me, that's a thing that I really enjoy. It's just Nintendo hardware. I will say that this is less exciting in that sense because there's not, like, a huge aesthetic difference, like the 50 different Nintendo 3DSs that I have, but, yeah.
I would also, I mean, the other argument that I always come back to is, like, if you're talking about visual enhancements, whether it be a screen or even if it's like textures or whatever, you will notice that stuff at first and then you will not notice it 10 minutes in. I mean, yeah. Like it just, you ignore it. That said, ergonomics and other functionality like that, you notice that every day. Like that is the kind of thing that like, I think is absolutely worth it. If they were to release a comfortable Switch, a Switch that was comfortable to hold for extended periods of time. That's a dream, man.
Yeah, we have some reader mail.
Yeah,
this is an interesting question from That Dang Phil. It's about Super Monkey Ball. Do the monkeys enjoy being inside the monkey balls? Is this pleasurable to them?
100%
absolutely
yes.
Not.
Oh.
Next question.
Wait, you're saying unequivocally they enjoy it?
Unquestionably, yes.
What are you basing?
That's ridiculous. That actually doesn't
make sense. Okay, so first of all, they put a baby in there, a baby monkey, and he seems to be having a blast. Like, no question about it. Secondly, I think they have full control over whether they're in the ball or not, as evidenced by Monkey Target, where they can open and close the ball at will.
Incorrect.
Just because...
Incorrect. Yeah, can I tell you why it's incorrect? Fucking, they put a Dreamcast in there. The Dreamcast isn't opening the ball. The Dreamcast isn't steering. That monkey is on a fucking uncontrollable ride versus the infinite, right? Where he is not steering, he is running along with some maniacally controlled sphere, hoping against hope that he is not plunged into death and instantly resuscitated for another course on this hellish ride.
Because no way is he enjoying himself. The monkey.
The ground moves, not the monkey.
Wait, are you saying that it's the same monkey? Because I just figured that they don't die. They just fall into like an endless pit and then we get another one.
No, this is
how
purgatory.
Is that better?
I didn't say it
how
was
is that better. Give me spikes at the bottom. Don't make me fall forever.
I didn't say it was. It's clearly bad.
Are you saying, Plant, that if the camera continued down below the course, there would be a massive, almost unthinkably large ravine full of monkey skeletons and plastic balls?
Well, it not like at the bottom of anything. That they would just, it would be like, imagine space, like all of space, and then just picture like
this
dead
is
monkeys
fucking,
in it.
You cannot tell people you're going to talk about video games and deliver Lovecraftian horror. Yeah. You can't do it.
I'm just saying what the game is.
He's just describing the mechanics of the game, the different levels and graphics.
They do get to open the ball in Monkey Target to use as a parachute. And I imagine that that's the best few seconds of that monkey's life.
Oh, that makes sense too, because then when they're in space, they open the ball and they just instantly freeze to death, which is probably much better than just floating
forever. The sweet release,
Next question's from Brett. What if Sega Channel had succeeded? Does anybody want to explain what Sega Channel was?
No.
No?
What is it? No, I just can't. So, Plant, you...
Sega Channel was... Okay, if you can imagine a game... I do want to establish... I know you guys are worried about your bona fides. Do you know what it is?
Sort of. I know you hook up to the internet and download games or something.
Yeah, it was like a cartridge that plugged... A modem shaped like a cartridge that would plug into the slot and then hook up to your cable connection. And you would like download games through it. Wild, absolutely wild.
I mean, I guess that did succeed in a way. The concept succeeded.
Right.
But I think the idea is that Sega would it would rule the internet.
It would be like Steam if Sega was Steam.
I mean, Sega Channel and Sega, like all of Sega's online ideas from the Dreamcast period too, it's really just Xbox. Like, Xbox Live is just a continuation of what Sega was doing. So I think if you want to know what that would look like, I think we could just say like, hey, Xbox Live, it continues to this day. It just was owned by a different company.
They had, did you realize they had at the beginning 50 and then eventually a year after release 70 different games updated bi-weekly.
Oh my God. On Sega Channel.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Good for them.
That's all the questions I have. What else are y'all enjoying before we wrap up?
I've been playing the Diablo 2 remake on Switch. I booted up because I wanted to test whether the larger screen on the OLED made games like that more playable. Because I tried playing that game on the original Switch, and it was, the text was very small and kind of hard to make out. And even though the resolution doesn't change in the larger screen, I actually found it to be a lot more playable on the larger OLED screen. So that was kind of interesting. I'm also kind of just, I mean, it's, I played so much of that game as a kid growing up. So it is kind of a throwback. Obviously, a little bit tainted by the whole situation going on right now and monstrousness. But again, there were a lot of people that worked on that game that did nothing wrong and don't deserve to be, you know, have their work rocketed into space because there were some disgusting monsters.
Right.
But as a game, you know, I think it is very much like a throwback. Like, it is not as playable or easy to get into as like Diablo 3, but I'm enjoying it. It just kind of scratches a retro itch for me.
I played the beta of Diablo 2 Resurrected, yep. And I did not play that game growing up, but I got really into Diablo 3 on Switch. Like, really, really into it. And I just, Diablo 2, just, I realize this is going to be heretical to a lot of people, but like, just felt like a kind of boring and slow version of Diablo 3, which is like, that's how the march of video game development progress goes on. But
I don't think I would be able to get into it as much as I have without that nostalgia factor tied into it. It's just,
right,
that's what's driving me.
If you didn't play it originally, find somebody who did and play with them and live vicariously through their excitement. That's what I've been doing with Maddie Myers at Polygon, and it's much better having somebody being like, no, you don't understand. It was fun that you didn't get any of the good stuff for the first 3 hours.
I've been playing an iOS game, everybody. Alert. I've been playing an iOS game called, and you're going to think this is a joke, but it's not. It's called Farm RPG. And it is, if you put Stardew Valley in a spreadsheet. That's an oversimplification. Do you guys remember A Dark Room?
Yes.
And then what was the follow-up to A Dark Room called? Do you remember? They made like another one that was...
Going to irritate me.
It was, it was some sort of... it was like a military...
A darker
officer
room?
Position. Shit, that's gonna kill. We need to
a noble circle.
Huh? No, that's not it.
The ensign.
Yes, ensign. That's right. Okay. Anyway, it's kind of like that, where like you have a farm and you buy seeds and you plant them in the farm, but it all takes place in these very. It all takes place in UI. It's just a big UI where you press buttons to plant things and then you sell them to get money, and then maybe you unlock a coop or a barn or a sawmill, and you can go exploring and you can go fishing, but it all takes place in these sort of like timed out spreadsheets, and I have been completely absorbed by it. If that sounds like your jam, if you liked those games, if you like sort of that farm vibe, Farm RPG. It's also an MMO, essentially. Like, there's a constant online chat room, and people are, like, trading shit, and yeah, it's fantastic.
Sure, why not?
Why not? Why shouldn't it be?
I have two quick ones. One is an Apple Arcade game that I know is on Switch and PS4 and probably some other stuff. It's called Jenny LeClue.
Mm, yeah.
Which is a... It's an adventure, you know, investigation game. Looks great, very well performed. It's a cool, like, she's sort of like an Encyclopedia Brown type. It is so much so that like the narrator of the game is the author of her book series, and he's like sort of narrating what you're doing while you're doing it, which presents like a cool. There's like a meta story about the author of this story. It's really neat. The puzzles are cute. It's a great game to play with a kid. This is one that Charlie and I play, you know, before she heads to bed. The other one I play this week is called Box One, which is a board game. If I could bring that to your attention. It is, like created by a company called Theory 11 in conjunction with Neil Patrick Harris. And it is a narrative board game designed to be played by yourself. And it leads you through a sort of like twisting story. The box itself changes and evolves as you're playing, and it's full of like different secrets and hidden riddles and stuff like that. There's a digital like online component to the game that is part of it and is part of this like building narrative and building story. Very, very neat. Very, very cool. It's called Box One. I don't want to say pretty much anything else about it. You know, you can play it with another person if you want. It might lessen the effect a little bit, but like, it's just a cool idea to have a board game just designed for one person to play that is like narrative, less than like, more mechanical.
My recommendation for the week, it's spoopy season. The Exorcist. Y'all, you got to go watch The Exorcist. It's
The what, Exorcist? The
William Friedkin, turns out one of the best directors, Sorcerer, one of my favorite movies of all time. I hadn't actually watched The Exorcist since high school. That movie holds up. It is absolutely fantastic. But I'm going to give you a little bit more. After you watch it, watch the documentary Leap of Faith, which is about how it was made. It's basically just a one-on-one interview with the director. And listen to the podcast Unspooled, because they have a new season that the first episode is about the movie. I want you to not have to spend a lot of money, dear listener. So if you go to either Apple TV or Amazon, you can get a 7-day free trial of AMC Plus. Just set a little reminder for yourself to cancel that right after you watch watch both that movie and the documentary, which are both on the service. And hey, you've got a free evening of spoopy fun.
All right. Cool. I wanted to thank the following people for writing reviews for the besties. Arcanine Pup 96. It's Wayne B, who I assume is Wayne Brady, Cylon, Kegler, and Ham Rick is here. Thank you, everyone, for writing reviews. Thank you to everyone else who wrote reviews. We greatly appreciate it. You can drop your reviews into Apple Podcasts if you haven't yet. Or you can just share the show on Twitter. Tell people about it.
We talked about Super Monkey Ball Mania, and then we talked about basically every Sega game. I don't think we talked about any of them long enough or seriously enough that it's worthy of a full recap. So Persona, Yakuza, Shinmu, Seaman, go play them all.
You said that last one.
Not Seaman.
Intentionally bad.
Not Seaman.
Oh, Seaman.
There you go. Seaman's the sequel.
No, we talked about both one and two.
Okay, that's fair.
Fair,
then
yeah.
It's actually Seas Man.
What about the honorable mentions real quick?
Box One, Jenny LeClue, Diablo II Resurrected, Farm RPG. I think that was it.
And The Exorcist. The Exorcist. Next week, we're going to be talking about Metroid Dread. Holy cow, I've played the whole thing and beat it. We'll see how these fellas think about the game. It is not easy.
All right.
Oh, it's about your skills.
I mean, about your skills specifically.
More.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to join us again next time for the besties. Because should the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Bestie!